We're doing Kitzur Shanoch Mikor Chaim, and we were up to what disqualifies a Sefer Torah. What happens if the letter is changed? So he writes like this: if the letter is changed in a significant manner, even though it doesn't seem like another letter, but it doesn't look enough like its own letter. You look at a lamed and it gets smudged. Now what is it? I don't know what it is, but it's not a lamed. So you got a problem that disqualifies the Torah. Yeah?
What is the ink made out of? Is there like a specific formula for the ink? Or is it just...
So the question was asked, what is the ink made out of? What is the ink made out of?
Ridiculously delicate.
So the ink, that's a machlokas, what the ink is made out of. Machlokas Rashi Tosfos Rambam. The Talmud in numerous places discusses it. Discusses putting kankantum, which is probably copper vitriol, into the ink. We generally go with the opinion of Maimonides that any ink that's black and matches the qualities that the Talmud says ink has to have, as in it's erasable, but when you erase it, you can't forge it, meaning it, there's a mark left when you erase it. Now, there are a few qualifying factors. It can't have any non-kosher ingredient. Most black inks today are kosher. They're kosher for any sacred Torah. We actually make our inks based on one of a few formulas. Different countries had different ways of making it. Basically, the idea was you needed tannic acid to make it black. So, tannic acid. So, in Europe, they used gallnuts. Gallnuts are basically... when different mosquito bite trees, they're mosquitoes that actually will sting a tree. And then the tree develops this little ball, just like we have a swelling, they have a swelling. And that swelling is filled with tannic acid. You cut that off, you get a lot of tannic acid. So today in North America, we have a problem getting this because we use pesticides. So we have very few gallnuts in North America, but we get them from the rest of the world. So the question is, how do you get tannic acid? So in Yemen, they had formulas where you take such and such kilo of pomegranate peels, because that's what was common in Yemen. And when you look at the different formulas that were used around the globe, basically they were looking at the raw materials that were available to them. And basically we're going with Maimonides' opinion that you just have to get it black. Anciently, what we used to use is coal, and we'd mix it with olive oil, or the Talmud says, "Kol hashmanim yafim ledio v'shemen zayit min hamuvchar." All oils are good for ink, and olive oil is the best. So there's a machlokas what that means. One understanding is that you get the coal from olive oil burning. That olive oil that burns produces the best coal that can be used to make the black of the ink. But again, it doesn't necessarily have to be that. Our ink generally has a few components, among them gum arabic, copper sulfate. I don't remember the other ingredients. I don't remember. But if you're interested, I should have I made ink myself. I bought the ingredients when I was learning Safras. You can make it. Yeah. Okay. Not sure it's worth it today. Ink is pretty cheap. I'm saying the cost of buying and shipping the ingredients, what are you going to do? Making a gallon of ink? I'm saying, and then what? I'm saying, if you're a big scribe, you're writing a lot, it might make sense for you. But otherwise, I think the ink is cheap enough pays to buy it. But we do have formulas, meaning we have a few books that give formulas on how to make the ink, and it basically depends on where you're coming from, where that defined where they got their tannic acid from. Okay, back to our... this is all according to the Rambam. Rashi and Tosfos have a big discussion whether there are exact, or what are the exact ingredients in the dye. But we go Rambam today. We go Rambam. Okay, so he says if you're going to be a Baal Korei, you should really know the shape of the letters so that you'll notice if there's a letter that's disqualified. Now that's good for the masses too, so that people end up reading a kosher Sefer Torah. I was once in a shul where the Baal Korei said, I'm willing to read, but not from that Torah. He said he's willing to read from other Sefer Torah, not from a specific Sefer Torah. The rabbi was new to the place, and the rabbi took a quick look at that Sefer Torah, and he said, it's kosher. And if this Baal Korei doesn't accept it, then he shouldn't read from any of the Torahs in our shul. He can't disqualify one and accept the others. Yeah, but the end of the story is that the Baal Korei went, met with the rabbi, showed the rabbi what his issues were, and then the rabbi said, he's right. The Baal Korei, it turned out the Baal Korei was right. The rabbi agreed the Sefer Torah was disqualified. So coming back to our halach over here, it's a good idea that Baal Korei, they should really know what disqualifies the Sefer Torah. He writes a very nice thought that many poskim write, that although Sfaradim and Ashkenazim have different customs as to how we write many letters, our kuf is slightly different, our gimel is slightly different, our ches is major difference, right? We Ashkenazim make a vav and a zayin, and then on top we do like a, what would you call that, like an upside down V to connect the vav and zayin. That's our ches, and the Sfaradim do it like the printed zayin, right? With a roof on top. What else is different? Our lamed is slightly different. Their lamed is like the printed lamed. Our lamed is more like a nun and a vav on top. It has a base. Our shin is major difference, right? Their shin has a flat bottom, and our shin comes to a point. You could see it on tefillin. Sfaradim and Ashkenazim. So, even though there are differences, he says, at the end of the day, they all have what to rely on. And Sfaradi can get an aliyah and an Ashkenazi Torah, and an Ashkenazi can get an aliyah by a Sfaradi Torah. Neither one disqualifies the other. And nonetheless, l'chatchila, every congregation should have a Sefer Torah that's their own. One of the Sefer Torah we have in our Ashkenazi shul, 20 years ago, came in a Sfaradi box. There was a Sephardi shul that was using it, so they put it in the Sephardi encasing. It was Ashkenazi ktav, Ashkenazi writing, but the Sephardim were using it because technically it's kosher for everyone. But ideally we try to keep things according to our custom. The klaf has to be whole. If it has a hole, if the cloth is punctured where the dye would go through, then you run into problems. So little holes aren't a problem. Now, why is this an issue? Because the cloth sometimes has natural holes. Not only as you process the cloth, but also a cloth is made from skin of animals, from skin of birds. You end up having holes. So the cloth can't have a puncture. It cannot have a hole if the dye would go through that puncture, through that hole.
You
say cloth? Like
cloth.
The parchment we write on.
It can be a skin of bird. It would have to be a
cloth. We'll see. I think I'll get to it. What happens if you lift the cloth, you lift the parchment to the sun, and you see the holes, which sometimes happens. A guy gets hagbah, and you see holes in the cloth. If when you write, you don't sense that hole, meaning the dye goes over it, and you don't have a problem, that's not a problem. What happens if it's a slight hole, like a needle, like a slight point, and when you pass the dye over it, that hole gets filled so with the dye, and you can't even tell it's there? That's kosher. Now this is important because sometimes we have gaps which are inappropriate in a mezuzah, and then the scribe makes holes in the mezuzah because the holes will disqualify that parchment as though, and that's as though he filled in the gap in the mezuzah. So I once I'll tell you guys an interesting story. You guys want to hear the long version or the short version? Long version.
To make a good story.
Okay, so I'll tell you the long version. The scribe I merited to learn under, Rabbi Shmuel Schneid, was once brought mezuzahs by a chassid of Chabad, and he checked the mezuzahs, and he gave back the chassid his mezuzahs, and he said, they're all kosher. Now, the chassid said, really? Because I sent a letter to the Rebbe of Chabad. I had, this was back when the Rebbe was alive according to everyone. I sent a letter to the Rebbe, and I said to him, I'm having issues A, B, and C, and the Rebbe told me to check my mezuzahs. So Rabbi Schneid said, look, I checked your mezuzahs, and they're all kosher. So the chassid says, fine. He goes back home. Okay. 2 months later, he comes back with his mezuzahs. So Rabbi Schneid says, what do you want me to do? So he says, well, I sent a letter back to the Rebbe, and the Rebbe sent me a letter back saying, check your mezuzahs. So I'm back, I'm checking my mezuzahs. Now you see he was a real chassid. So Rabbi Schneid said, look, I don't think anything happened to them in 2 months, but if you want, I'll check them again. So he says, yeah. The Rebbe said, check your mezuzahs. So check the mezuzahs. Okay. The guy comes back the next day. Rabbi Schneid says, they're all kosher. So the chassid says, fine. Goes back, puts them all up on the door. 2 months later, he's back with the mezuzahs again. So Rabbi Schneid says, what do you want me to do? So he said, the Rebbe, I sent the Rebbe a letter back, and the Rebbe sent me a letter back saying, check your mezuzahs. So I'm back again. So Rabbi Schneid said, look, you want to, fine. He starts going through the mezuzahs, and he calls the guy up, and he says, wait a second, you have one mezuzah here, you didn't bring me the first 2 times, and I'll prove it to you, you could come look, because all your mezuzahs are wrapped the way I wrap a mezuzah, and there's one mezuzah here, which is wrapped differently. And that's a mezuzah you didn't bring the last 3, you know, this is your 3rd. I don't remember if it was the 3rd or 4th time. So the guy says, really? He comes and looks. And he says, right, I didn't notice. I have an attic in the back. I have a shed in the back of the house. And I never took the mezuzah off that when I came to check. And this time, I guess I noticed to take it off. Rabbi Schneid check. And that mezuzah was really possible. That mezuzah was disqualified. So I heard the story firsthand. The stories became quoted in other places. I mean, they quoted it in books about the Rebbe and stuff. But I heard it from Rabbi Schneid, the sofer who actually checked the mezuzahs, who had the story. So, okay. So, my parents told me that when we were children, they had a period where we were getting sick one after another. And the family doctor, who was a Chabad chassid, after seeing us coming into her again and again and again, she told my parents, check your mezuzahs. Family doctor, okay? She was a woman from Russia. So my parents actually checked and found something wrong with the mezuzah. And when they fixed it, we stopped getting sick. So we had a year where every week we were in the hospital with another kid. We had this goes back 5 years ago. The joke in the hospital and in Tarim, it became like a joke. Ah, you're back. You guys want membership? We were there every week with a different kid. And you're talking about some of the stuff was serious. RVS. You're talking about RSV. That's a very serious virus that for newborns. We were there. We were in solitary confinement for a week. Every week something else happened. And at one point I decided, hey, let me check my mezuzahs. So I went to the sofer. And the sofer told me, I don't remember, I think the mezuzah on the kid's bedroom was not kosher, but the issue was, the thing that disqualified it was the sofer who wrote it made holes in the parchment where there was excess parchment, where halachically you really needed to take off that parchment. And the holes he made were just this, like it says over here, there were these slide holes which the dye could go over so they don't count. So technically, he didn't accomplish anything with the holes he made. And the sofer told me, whoever made you these mezuzahs didn't know how to make mezuzahs. I fixed them because I just made the holes bigger. And that already makes it as though the parchment's gone because that hole, that puncture. Okay, so I'm just telling you, for what it's worth, this is something to think about.
Did that help with the kids in the...
After that, things calmed down, yeah. But I don't believe these stories. What can I do?
Just if you're skeptical about this one.
What can I say? I don't know.
You don't believe it, but you did check the
mezuzahs. I did check the mezuzahs, right? And I am telling you the story.
That was what surprised me the most.
Look. Yeah.
We got two Huffpod friendly stories right in a row.
Yeah. Drinking.
Okay, so that he says you want the hole. If the hole is slight, so then in instances where the hole would disqualify the Torah, so then here it qualifies. I had that. I was once called up to Torah, and I saw a hole in the Sefer Torah, a hole right by a letter, in the, like in the middle of a hay, I think it was. So that, or under the hay, according to many commentaries, that disqualifies the Torah. It was a visible hole, and it was a hole that obviously the die would go through. The Sefer Torah was disqualified. So that's this idea. You need, if the hole is big enough that the die can't really go over it, so then that disqualifies. Now, it depends on where you have the hole. The hole, if the hole's in the middle of a letter, it'll disqualify the letter. If the hole is in some blank spot of the cloth that's irrelevant, like on the side of the page, that doesn't disqualify. The issue is, we discussed that you need space around the letter. And sometimes the hole comes up right to the letter, and then you don't have any space around the letter. That's where you have a discussion, according to many opinions, that would disqualify the Torah. Okay, we'll do the last two halachot here. What happens if letters get erased? This happens as Sifrei Torah get old. So if a child can still see it, if when you look at the Sefer Torah, there's still a remnant that a child could read it, and originally it was fully kosher, and only over time it wore down, that's kosher. On a weekday, we would fix it. On a Shabbos, it's still kosher. What happens if the dye spreads? Sometimes because of humidity, so the dye smudges, and then letters can start seeming like they're attached. So if it's discernible that really the two letters are distinct, but because of a smudge, because they smudged a little bit, it seems like they're touching, that would still be kosher.